for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 351 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This year's New York Comic Con was different from ones in the recent past, in that DC Comics really didn't have a lot of talent. Now, the ones they had were great, no doubt about that, Brian Michael Bendis and Scott Snyder. But since there were only a few of them, many of us in the media didn't get a chance to talk with them very much. So I took the opportunity to go and speak with some other comics creators. And you'll get to hear those three interviews in this podcast. First up is George Mann from Titan Comics and a series called Newbery and Hobbs, which is a great mystery book. The second issue has just come out. Then I came across a great indie title, and I talked to the writer Omar Marzi from Zindan, which has a great diverse feel to it, and it's something that I think you're really going to enjoy as much as I do, because I like those kinds of stories. Then everything wraps up with Joseph Illidge from Valiant. He is their executive editor, and he's got some great plans that I think you should know about, so I'm sure you're going to enjoy what he has to say. There's a lot to get to in this 351st episode, so let's get to it. I am here talking with George Mann, one of the creators of Newbery and Hobbs, The Undying from Titan Comics. How you doing, George?
Hey, I'm having a great show so far, thanks.
Well, it's only Thursday. We'll see how that goes. Yeah. So why don't we go ahead and dive in and talk about the books. Who are Newbery and Hobbs?
Okay, so they are investigators, agents working for Queen Victoria in Victorian London, but it's an alternate Victorian London in which the Queen didn't die in 1902, and instead she's being kept alive on kind of a steampunkish life support throne. So we're now into kind of 1902, 1903, and she no longer makes public appearances, but she's running this group of agents and operatives. And Newbery particularly is her first line of defence against anything that's mysterious or occult or apparently supernatural in origin.
Okay. All right. So who's Hobbs then, if that's Newbery?
So Hobbs, Veronica is supposedly Newbery's assistant, although people learn fairly early on in the novel series that she's actually an agent for the Queen as well, and she's there to keep an eye on Newbery. Newbery he's got a big interest in the occult, and there's a little bit of concern that he might go a little bit too far. He also likes dabbling in laudanum, smoking opium. So Veronica's there to keep him on the straight and narrow, really. And actually, in the novel series that precedes the comic, she's very much the main character. She's the driving force. It's her story. Newbery's kind of a constant throughout, but with Veronica, we're seeing a real evolution of her character. And she has a sister as well who starts the novel series in an asylum and is having kind of these seizures that give her visions, potential visions of the future or possible futures. So their stories become intermingled as well as we go through the series.
Did you write the novels that were the prequels?
Yeah. So it's there's four novels out already. There's a fifth novel coming in February called The Revenant Express. There's a short story collection. And these have been going on for 10 years. So the comic marks the 10th anniversary of the characters and the setting.
Does it help to read the books before you read the comic?
I've tried to write it so that anyone can jump on here. But if you are a fan of the novels, there'll be things that you'll appreciate in the comic as well. Little references or character appearances back to things that you've seen in the books. But hopefully in a way that doesn't get in the way of someone picking up for the first time. And that's certainly the feedback I've had now that the first issue's out, is that there are quite a few people jumping on board for the first time with the comic.
Okay, I want to get into more of the content, but I've got to ask, I'm just fascinated because I don't know many novel writers who go into comics. I mean, what was it about comics that attracted you to it?
I've always loved comics as a reader. I think ever since I was a kid, reading comics. And, you know, over in England, we tended to get reprint comics from Marvel, some from DC, the Star Wars comics, things like that, Spider-Man. So I read a lot of comics growing up, and British comics as well. So comics is something that I've always wanted to write. And I put my kind of my years in as a novel writer. Happily, what happened was I'd started working with Titan on the Newbery & Hobbs books, and they decided to launch a comics imprint. So I jumped straight in there and said, I want to write a Newbery & Hobbs comic. And thankfully, they were supportive of that process. And it's taken a few years to get to this stage. And in the meantime, I've been writing Doctor Who comics, Dark Souls, Warhammer. So I've kind of cut my teeth writing comics and learning the craft a little bit.
I was going to ask, was it a difficult transition to go from novel to comic? But you've already got experience, so not
well,
so.
Yeah, I mean, I think making that leap initially, it was. And some of these Newbery & Hobbs scripts are some of the first ones I wrote, actually, and early drafts of, which were then subsequently polished. And you've got to learn to think in visually, to think about economy, that in a novel you can be really expansive and take as long as you want over a scene, really, or a story. With a comic, you're thinking about 20, 22 pages. You've got to, and you know, got to boil the story down to its real essence, and tell. You know, the thing that I suppose that I learned early on was that a comic is a series of stills. So you tell what happens, but you don't tell the action. You don't show the action. You show a series of stills, like the cause and effect. So you don't show the punch being thrown. You show the fist going back and the person falling in the next panel. Whereas in a novel, you write that action. So it was kind of, that was one of the key things I had to learn. And hopefully I've managed to apply that here.
Now, did Titan help you do this, or was this something you had to learn on your own? How did you do it?
Titan were really supportive, yeah, the editorial team at Titan. I think, really, I just launched in and did some first drafts of those scripts, and then they gave me some feedback and I polished them until I got to the point where I was comfortable just working straight in the comic form. But I think also because I've been such a comic reader for so long, I kind of had an instinctive feel for what to do, how to shape the story, how to kind of make sure it works in those 22 pages.
Now, I got to ask, of course, these guys are somewhat detectives.
Yeah.
About that. Now, I have to say, even Detective Comics doesn't tell detective stories. So I'm really happy to see your comic do some detective work, because, you know, I love detective stories, and I never get them anymore, so I just want to tell you I really appreciate that. What is it about the detective genre that appeals to you? I mean, the mystery, you know, you start with the solution and you work your way back, supposedly how you write it. Yeah. Is that how you did this?
Yeah, very much so. It's a case of breaking the whole story, whereas I suppose within an action-adventure story, sometimes I'll launch in and tell the story as I go. I think with a crime story, a detective story, I tend to try and work the whole thing out in detail first, so you can plant the red herrings in the right places. And you know, Newbery and Veronica, they're really very much inspired by Sherlock Holmes, Doctor Who, things like Steed and Peel from the Avengers, the British TV show. So we're kind of in that mystery universe, you know, that way of telling stories, that mode. And so I really wanted this to have that feel. And the novels have that feel too. They usually start with a dead body and they go from there. And because I'm playing in a kind of fantasy version of Victorian London, I get to put kind of all sorts of bizarre things in there, so it's not as straightforward as a normal straightforward crime would be.
Was that a challenge? I mean, you've written Doctor Who and stuff, so that going into the sci-fi and doing steampunk stuff like that was that difficult? Because although the novels probably had a lot of this in it before that,
sure,
didn't it?
Yeah, and I think I wrote Newbery & Hobbs was really the first thing that I wrote for as a proper professional writer before I'd written any Doctor Who. So I suppose, you know, I grew up with Doctor Who. There's quite a big influence of it in what I write. I think it just came naturally. I mean, the story behind Newbery & Hobbs really is that I was trying to write my first big novel as a big science fiction space opera, kind of Peter F. Hamilton, Alistair Reynolds type thing, and failing miserably at it. And a friend of mine just said to me, you know, write what you love. Write something for you. Forget trying to write something commercial, because that's what I was doing. I was trying to write something I thought I might be able to sell. Write something for yourself. And I thought, well, actually, that's great advice. So I threw in kind of a melange of everything that I love. Hammer Horror and Doctor Who and Sherlock Holmes and all that kind of thing. And this is what came out of it. And thankfully, people seemed to like it and bought it.
Now, I have to say, I'm in trouble now, because now I want to know what's happening. And the first issue is out. How many issues are in the series?
It's a four-issue story. So it's a mini-series, and it tells a complete story in those four issues. And hopefully, if people are like it, we'll come back and do more. But we wanted it to be a complete mystery in that four-issue arc.
Kind of interested, because it looks like this is an original story. This is not in the other stuff.
Yeah, it's an original story, yeah.
Are you ever going to convert the novels into comics, or do you want to just do originals?
I'd never say never, but I'm a big believer in writing for the form you're working in, so the novels are written to be novels and the comics are written to be comics. So what I'd really like to do is to tell more stories, more new original stories in comic form, rather than retread old ground, because I think readers are excited by that. They get to see another glimpse of the characters doing something different in a different medium.
Well, I love the art too. I mean, did you have any influence on who the artist was?
Yeah, we talked it through a lot, actually, and we went back and forth on various options. Steve White, who was the editor at the time at Titan, suggested Dan for it, Dan Boltwood. And Dan worked up some pages and some sample character designs, and I just fell in love with them instantly. I think it's, it's got a really individual style. It's quite... almost cartoon-like. It kind of reminds me of a Saturday morning cartoon, and I think that really appeals. But it really works actually with the material. And I'd really imagined at first they're kind of going with a very Baroque Victorian-style design, but I absolutely adore what Dan's done with it. And it's and that's the beauty of working on comics as well, rather than novels. It's you're not working alone; you're working as a team, and Dan brings a lot to the comic.
Was that a big transition too? Because you had been writing. Well, you had. You did Doctor Who after you wrote the script?
So I wrote the original drafts of these scripts first. Then I went on and wrote Doctor Who and lots of other stuff. And then I came back to these scripts and gave them another go over before Dan.
It's a challenge, though, isn't it, to give up? I mean, you've got total control of things. You're writing the words. You're doing business.
Yeah.
Suddenly, somebody else comes in and they provide their interpretation.
Yeah.
I mean, it's great that you like this. I mean, did you have to do any sort of, well, I'd like to see something a little different kind of stuff?
Very little of it, actually. And Dan, he's been very sensitive to the material. I think he's read some of the original novels as well, so he's tried very hard to capture my intent with the artwork. So I had very little to do, the odd bit of detail where I said, oh, actually, I've subsequently described that like this. So it was more about continuity than anything else. But it is. It's a difficult thing to let go of that control a little bit. And actually, that was the great thing about doing all those Doctor Who comics and the Warhammer comics things, was learning to work as a partnership and actually seeing that the strength in that. If you as a writer try to control what the artist's doing, it's never going to be as good as if you give them the creative freedom to express themselves in the best possible way.
Now, talk about what the story is about in this book, as opposed to the novels and stuff like that. What's kind of the summary? I don't want to spoil stuff, but what kind of things are going on in this?
Without spoilers.
That's a mystery for you. A mystery is very difficult to talk about because you're going to give something away.
So there's a series of people have been going missing. All across London, and some of the detectives are looking into that, and they think they're connected to this group of cultists, this gang of cultists who are going around with skull face masks on. And very early on in the first issue, you discover that they're not quite what they seem. They're people who've they're kind of cyborgish, I suppose, steampunk cyborgs, and they're starting to try and get to the bottom of what's the connection between these things. Meanwhile, we've had another character who's popped up, Professor Archibald Angel Christ, who's dredging his lake and has found a hansom cab, steam-powered hansom cab, at the bottom of the lake with a bizarre body inside it. So he's called Newbery in to help investigate. And it's really the story of how those two threads come together, and we discover who's behind the mystery of the missing people, what he's doing with the missing people, and where these creatures came from.
Right. It's a nicely paced story. The art is gripping as far as... And I think it's a... To marry the words and the art, is especially with a word background, is a little tough. So I think you did a great job with this. It's off to a great start. I'm really... See, now the problem... Is the first issue out? It is available right now through Titan. And do we know when number two is going to come out?
I think number two is out any day, actually. Next week.
So when this post, it's number two should already be out, which will be great. Now, of course, four, is it going to be collected after number four?
Absolutely. So early next year, there'll be, in the spring, there'll be a collected edition, trade edition of it. We're also serialising a prose story in the comics as well, which is going to be collected in the trade collection as well.
So you get the best of both worlds. You get to write your words on your own and also work with somebody.
Yeah.
Very good.
And anyone who picks up issue one will see that there's a soundtrack out.
Yes, I was going to ask about that. Talk about that, because, you know, there have been very few comics that have done that. Some people put playlists. Okay. But to actually have your own soundtrack, what was that like?
Well, Brad Hoyt, the composer, contacted me because he'd read the novels and been inspired by the novels, and he'd written these beautiful pieces of work, and said, you know, I'd love to do more with your endorsement. And of course, I jumped at the chance. So we talked a lot about what he was going to do, and he's crafted an album. And in fact, he's releasing them digitally at the moment as three albums. There's a soundtrack for each of the first three novels at this stage. They perfectly fit the comic as well. There's a theme tune, as if it was a TV show, and then there's each scene is scored.
Do you hear the music now when you read the...
I listen to the music when I'm writing, actually. Yeah, absolutely. Put me right in the
music. So you'd recommend it. So it says how to get a hold of the music in the comic.
It does indeed, and there's a free track to download. If you buy the comic, you can follow the link. Download that as a sample as well.
Well, the book is called Newbery and Hobbs, The Undying, number one. Probably number two is out by the time this gets to post. So, George, you're doing great fun with this. I'm so glad we get another mystery. I haven't had one of those in a while, so I'm really enjoying it.
Thank you very much. Hopefully they'll be coming for a while.
I'm talking right now with Omar Marzi from a book, and you may have to pronunciate it for me. It's Zindan?
Yep. The book is Zindan, and it's an action fantasy series based in the Mughal and Persian Empire.
Is this like based on a fable, or is this a new story? How did you do this?
Yeah, this is a new story. We mixed a lot of our sort of Eastern mythology with some elements of what makes stories good in the West, and tried to create something that has a distinctly sort of southeastern flavor, but is very palatable in the Western audience.
This takes place in India?
Yep, in medieval India in like sort of the late 1600s, 1700s.
Where would that be today? Still India?
Still India, yeah. That would be the Indus Valley, old India, which was basically the culmination of Pakistan, Bangladesh, India, Afghanistan. It was all under India.
What made you want to do this in a comic?
You know, looking at comics, obviously, you know, we see that they all tend to take place in New York City or a Gotham-style, you know, setting. And when I was thinking about it, I was like, you know, it would be nice to introduce something from our own backgrounds, you know, having being like the son of Pakistani parents. You know, I thought it'd be nice to kind of inject some of that ancestry into the comic book world. And you don't see much in that area in comics. So I thought it's got a very nice aesthetic. It looks very different. And it would be a nice way to kind of introduce people to some different cultures.
Is it uniquely sold in the U.S. or are you going to sell it overseas as well?
So uniquely right now we are in the U.S. We've had taken the story overseas. So it's been available at some comic conventions in Pakistan and we've been giving it out. But right now, it's primarily in the U.S. We do offer digital copies, so through our website, people can get, you know, access to the book. We're hosted on a few sort of mobile readers that are international. So there's one in India called Huhuba, and there's one in Pakistan called CFX Comics. And then we are on Comixology, so wherever people can download Comixology, we can.
And it's spelled Z as in zebra, I-N-D-A-N.
Yep, that's it, Zindan.
And it's the subtitle is The Last Ansars.
Yep, The Last Ansars.
I got to tell you, I'm probably going to mispronounce all this stuff,
no,
so I'm going to let you do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I'm sure I'll fracture it. I'll Americanize all this stuff.
It's all right.
But go ahead. And what's an Ansar?
So an Ansar is actually, you know, a helper, or a, we would consider also a guardian. And so, you know, in our story, we have two brothers, Zayn and Thamur, who are part of this order called the Ansars. And what they do is they guard this prison, which is Zindan. Zindan is actually a Farsi word. It's for prison. And the whole story is based off of this prison that falls and releases all this evil into the world. And it's now on these two brothers, Zayn and Thamur, who are the last of those Ansars, or those guardians, to go out in the world and recapture all those bad guys.
It's interesting. I got to ask how you got the art together. Who does the art? Because it's really very, it's got a very strong American feel to some of the stuff. And the coloring is very painted, which I always find, you know, really appealing. So how did you put the book together? I mean, did you bring the art team together? How did this go?
So it started with, you know, finding somebody that I liked in terms of art. And, you know, I have a lot of influences. Jim Lee is one of my favorite. And you can kind of see that reflected in the art. And so I found our lead artist, Sajjad Shah, who's also Pakistani and happens to be a big comic book fan out from Miami. And then he helped me kind of put together the rest of the team, which composed of Adelso Corona, who's done work on Deadpool. And then we've had Alonzo Espinoza, who's our colorist, and Jessica Jimerson, who's doing our letters. And so with all of us together, you know, we've come to this aesthetic, which I think is, you know, very Western influenced, but has a very distinct also Eastern aesthetic. And so between all those artists, we've kind of settled on this style, which I think is a very sort of mass appeal. And, you know, I think hopefully people will enjoy.
Now, did you come up with the story yourself? Did you work with the artists to do it? How did you do that?
So, I mean, when I was thinking about stories, originally I was thinking sort of something very biographical in ways like, you know, a South Asian hero in New York City. And then I realized, you know, this has been done before in many ways. And so I was like, let me just break free from that sort of trope as much as possible. And I was like, what are, you know, the strengths of stories? And it's usually the villains. You have to have this, like, gallery of villains. And I was thinking, what's the best way to have an endless reservoir of villains? And then it just kind of popped in my head, a prison, where I can always, later in the series, bring another villain. You know, you think about the greatest series, Batman, because of the villains, Spider-Man, because of the villains. It's the villains that really drive your series. And so I wanted to make sure that there's a way that I could always bring out another villain, you know, later on, to, you know, keep it fresh. And the prison sort of made sense.
Now, I don't want to spoil anything, but I understand, I got a chance to glance through the four issues, and I was really interested because it looks like they get out of the prison and are starting to go places. Talk about who the villains are. You're talking about the importance of them.
Yeah.
How did you come up with them? I mean, do they have any allusions to the culture you're working with?
Absolutely. So, like, one of the strong things in Eastern culture are these concepts of jinns. And they're sort of the third creation. There's man, there's angels, and jinns. Jinns are made of fire. And so, in many ways, you know, the idea of jinn is turned into genies, and they're a little bit more pleasant. But jinns are tend to be a little bit scary. And so part of that was to kind of create a little bit of more, like, the mythologic fantasy element. And so those are a major sort of villain in our story. There's also this guy, the Immortal, who is, I think, the arch nemesis or the real main villain of our story. And he's drawn from some of the biblical stuff about, you know, sort of the people of Gog and Magog, which you may have heard of. And when they come forth, they're going to bring forth the end of the world. And so he's a long descendant of them, and he's got a lot of motives that we can explore in the story when you pick it up, but he's one of the main villains. So I tried to draw a little bit from, like, Eastern mythology, as well as, like, a lot of biblical stuff, which is, you know, I think preserved throughout all the Abrahamic religions. And so we thought that would be nice to kind of insert different elements that connect people from different backgrounds.
Do you know, did the artist, did he draw on, like, historical figures for the characters or likenesses, or did he make them up from his imagination? How'd that happen?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's funny. I took a lot of the characters from, actually, Bollywood. You know, like, a lot of the actors have this kind of aesthetic, and it helped really translate that to the artist very quickly. So some people might see some resemblances in some actors.
Did you put yourself in this book at all? Because sometimes writers do that. And I noticed you got the two main characters of brothers. Are you one of those characters?
In many ways, I think we are, because my co-writer is in many ways a sort of like a younger brother to me. And so there's a lot of like metaphors between the two brothers in our relationship. But overtly, I haven't put myself in yet. But we may see me, you know, as a villain in the future. Who knows?
Okay, so the first four issues are out. How many more issues are coming for this?
So we're going to keep going. Right now we have two in production, and we hope to have those out by next year for Comic-Con. And that'll wrap sort of like our first story arc, which is, you know, follows the immediate fall of the prison in the initial introduction of the story, which sets the stage for everything else, and what they do in terms of their plan for setting things right. And so then we're going to try to move forward into like the real clash with that villain I talked about, the Immortal, in our next arc, which will come after this, and we'll keep going. And you know, they're going to make a lot of friends and enemies along the way, so I think it'll be pretty exciting.
Now, if you were to describe this to somebody that doesn't know anything about it, how would you describe it?
I'd say very quickly, it's a Game of Thrones meets Prince of Persia. You know, it's a story about political jostling for power, but at the same time, with a lot of adventure and excitement.
And you've already mentioned how people can get a hold of it. When can we expect issue 5? When is it going
to
come?
So I hope to have that done in the next 2 or 3 months. It's you know, it's always a challenge being sort of like a small press and an independent publisher, but we're on track. Our script is done, and we're started the art. So hopefully, in 2 or 3 months, we'll have it done.
Okay. So trying to think of if you mentioned how to get the book, and I'm kind of fixated on that because it's important. Are you aiming to go to Diamond at some point, or are you going to continue to be an indie person?
Yeah, I mean, we've talked to Diamond already, and they've expressed interest, but, you know, in order to sort of do justice to our fans, we want to make sure that we hit deadlines with the, you know, the issues. And right now, we're sort of 3/4 of a way through an arc, so we want to wrap that one up, so that way, when people start getting these in stores, they don't have to wait 6 months or 7 months to get the next issue, that they can get them monthly, very quickly, wrap up that first arc, and then we can get to the second volume after that.
And a trade after that?
Yeah, definitely a trade. Definitely a trade.
What does Zindan stand for, the name? I'm just curious what that word is.
So Zindan is a Farsi term for prison or dungeon. Yeah, and it basically summarizes the story, which is, you know, this story that revolves around this magic, mythical dungeon that has, you know, released all these evil creatures and people into the world.
As far as the main characters, like the main guy and the brother, are we going to see more character development with them? Are we going to see more of their adventures?
I think what you'll notice is that I think the story starts off a little heavy, and it really deals with these two guys who don't really know much about their past and are struggling with a lot of trauma from that very, you know, uncertain history that they have. And they're going to hopefully, you know, present a lot of dialogue and thought that people will find mature and nuanced, and I think that's sort of the strength of our series, is that we take a very, thoughtful approach to their history and then, you know, their how they come to become heroes.
So I'm always interested in other cultures and learning about other cultures. This book will help us understand the culture a little better?
Absolutely. We wanted to put a lot of sort of things, cultural references in there, so people can kind of at least become familiar with things and start to recognize some stuff. So, you know, if you look at our backdrop here, it's got a very southeastern vibe to it and aesthetic, and, you know, even some of the words that we use in the story, which are going to be, like, you know, explained with the glossary, you know, people start to get a little bit more familiar with the culture and terminology, and it might make them at least inspire them to kind of do some more research.
I get a kick because your booth is set up like a tent here at New York Comic Con. That was intentional, I guess, to get you in the feel for the book?
Yep, exactly. We wanted to, you know, if you walk by and you look into our tent, it looks like you kind of transformed into another world. And that's what we wanted to do, kind of a window into a new world. I mean, we've got a beautiful New York City behind us, but, you know, we want to take your imagination somewhere else.
Well, New York is a good place for this kind of stuff because I like to, there are other books that I enjoy that help me understand some cultures. And I think that's a real great accomplishment you're doing. I think it's a great thing for us, you know, to be able to learn a little bit about other people's cultures and to other perspectives. So I wish you much success with it. It's a really great looking book. I really think it's going to be fun. I can't wait to see the next issue.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it.
dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
Right now, I'm talking with
Joseph Illich, executive editor of Valiant Comics,
and we're here at Saturday at New York Comic Con. How's your Saturday going?
It's pretty intense. I mean, New York Comic Con is intense in general, but really, Saturday is kind of like it's breathing room only. The aisles are full, Artist Alley is full, all the fans are here, and it's great.
All right, now you're the executive editor for Valiant. How long have you held that position?
I'm at the end of the first 6 months. We have our full new editorial team in play. Robert Myers, editorial director. Carl Bowler is our newly promoted senior editor. Lisa Hawkins, editor. And David Menchel, assistant editor. So it's great to have the entire new editorial team here premiering at New York Comic Con for the fans. And what we do is we talk every week. We work with writers and artists, all the different creators. And we bring in different voices, veteran talent, talent that's new to the industry, talent that's new to Valiant, and we're crafting the future of the company.
That's great. Speaking of the future of the company, what books do you have out right now?
Well, right now, ongoing series, we have Shadow Man, we have Ninja K, we have Quantum and Woody, we have Exo Man of War, we have a variety of miniseries, we have Faith Dreamside, which is out right now. At the end of this year, we're launching Bloodshot Rising Spirit, which is a definitive origin of Bloodshot. That's coming out in November. We're launching a new Livewire series that is coming out in December. And we're also wrapping up our Britannia on the third volume of our line of Britannia miniseries, which are historical fiction stories.
Okay, that's great. Now, talk to me a little bit about Faith, because I always am intrigued by the fact that somebody who is, let's say, not slender can still fly, and a lot of people really like the character because she's got obviously got, you know, foibles. She's a feminine character who is not your standard superheroine in the comics. Talk about her and why she goes over so well.
The thing about Faith is Faith is a hopeful person that has the kind of optimism that we need more of in our world today. She really has a heroic spirit, and in the Faith Dreamside miniseries, you're going to see that heroic spirit tested, and you're going to really get a sense of what makes her such a unique, endearing character. She's beloved. She's a legacy character from the first iteration of Valiant, and she started out in the Harbinger series, in the new iteration of Valiant, and she is the hope that we need more of. She is exemplary in that way.
Now, I understand she's got other female characters she's interacting with in this new series. Do you want to talk about them?
That's right. In Faith Dreamside, you're going to see Anomalia. Anomalia is a superpowered psiont. Psiots are people that have latent superhuman abilities that are activated by other psiots, and you're going to see Dr. Mirage. Dr. Mirage is a celebrity who can communicate with the dead, and she has her husband who is actually dead, so her husband is a ghost, and so she communicates with her husband who's on a separate plane, and the three of them are really coming together in a story about nightmares and how nightmares challenge us and force us to find the heroic core in ourselves and rise past our own fears.
I find it interesting that she's got an alter ego now. She doesn't want to go around looking like Faith all the time. She has a secret identity.
That's right. There's a very specific reason why Faith has a secret identity as Summer Smith journalist, and that's explained in the Faith Dreamside miniseries. And it's really interesting because that kind of secret identity dichotomy is something that works perfect with the character, because the character has ethos. She has a morality that is very much based in essential comic book superheroism. So the idea of her having that kind of superhero identity is really a reflection of her character.
Now, you had a big Harbinger event recently. How did that go? I mean, it seems like it went over real well.
Harbinger Wars 2 was really a great opportunity to showcase the superhuman Psyot community and really establish a new kind of social landscape on which to elevate new characters and create new stories. So the Live Wire ongoing series is a reflection of that.
Now, I guess it's spinning out of that. We've got Toyo Harada has his own book coming up. Talk a little bit about that.
That's right. So The Life and Death of Toyo Harada is really a big epic story about the founder and leader of the Harada Foundation, Toyo Harada. It starts in the 1940s, dealing with his origin due to the bombing of Hiroshima. It's by Joshua Dysart and a collection of an amazing artist, Kafu, Miko Soyan, and Andrew Dalhouse as colorist. And it's really exemplary of not only the legacy of Valiant, but the commitment to story-driven, character-driven sagas that people can immediately get into. We're very excited about it. The first issue we've had premiering here at New York Comic Con for the fans. It'll be coming out in March, and it really is a shining example of what this company's all about.
Excuse me. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. All right, somebody's looking at Faith right now. Okay. Livewire has also gotten to be a popular character. I remember like about a year or two ago, I interviewed folks who were going to star in the live-action version of it. So Livewire's on the rise. She has a book now too, right?
That's right. The Livewire series will be launching in December by writer Vita Ayala, artist Raul Allen and Patricia Martin, letterer Saida Temofonte. We've started premiering pages out in public. It looks really great. Livewire is a character who, to save her people, threw the entire country into a blackout, and so she's public enemy number one. So it's a story about the consequences of that, and how do you look after your own people when you're on the run from the American government.
Someday you got to have Livewire interact with Faith at some place.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that I see coming in the future. Keep your eyes open. We're definitely going to do it. It would be very interesting to have those two characters working together to see how their personalities clash but also dovetail well with one another.
So how about Eternal Warrior? What's he got coming?
Eternal Warrior is going to be one of the main characters in an upcoming miniseries called Incursion, which is going to be written by Andy Diggle, and it's going to be co-written by Alex Patnadel, who's done a lot of great work for Vault Comics, Boom Studios, and Titan. It's going to be illustrated by Dougie Braithwaite, who is one of our exclusive talents, one of the best artists in the industry, and it's going to be colored by Jose Villarubia, one of the best colorists and illustrators in the North American comic book space, and it's really about an invasion into this world through an other dimensional location called the Dead Side, and it's going to be how the Eternal Warrior and Tama the Geomancer defend the Earth against this invasion.
Anything else that you guys have coming that we should know about?
As we discussed, you know, really the end of this year is about Bloodshot Rising Spirit, which is going to be the definitive origin of Bloodshot, which is going to be a great invitation for everyone to the character due to the Vin Diesel movie coming out through Sony February 21st, 2020. And Livewire number one, which is going to launch that ongoing series, is going to come out December 19th. And then over the following weeks and months, you'll hear about our plans about the growth of the company heading towards the 30th anniversary of Valiant.
So if we want to follow you guys and keep up with the stuff that's going on, how do we do that?
Valiant Comics on Twitter, Valiant Entertainment on Instagram, and Valiant Comics, I believe, on Facebook.
Website?
ValiantEntertainment.com.
Okay. So you guys have a lot of things coming, so we'll have to keep in touch with you guys and keep the things moving forward. I always am a little frustrated that your books, they sell well, but I think they should be selling a lot better. You've got great talent doing great characters and great stories. And I'm always out trying to tell people you should be picking up Valiant if you're not. What would you say to somebody that maybe that has not picked up a Valiant comic before?
Valiant is the best superhero universe in which story and character are paramount above all, and it invites new readers. We have a great fan base. We have great support from the retailers. Whatever genre you like, this is the place for you. We have great characters, so come along for the ride.
Well, like I said, I've been a fan of Valiant for a long time, and I just wish you guys much more success. You've had good success, but I think you can do even better, so I'm looking forward to that.
Thank you very much. We have a great legacy. You know, so many great minds came together and built the legacy and the greatness that is Valiant Comics, and we're looking forward to taking it into the next era of growth.
All right, thank you very much.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
And that's a wrap for this episode. Be sure to be back next week when I'll have another interview with a great comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.